Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/bookshow. Then go over to morbidlybeautiful.com as we are now part of the Morbidly Beautiful Podcasting Network.
It's alive!
Everybody here dies by dawn.
Dead by dawn!
Welcome to the Spook Show. Welcome back to the All-American Spook Show podcast. I'm Josh, and I'm joined here with Tiana.
Hey.
And the Professor Smoke.
What's up?
And this week, we're going back to our rotation of horror movies. And Smoke, it was your turn in the rotation. And the only criteria is horror. And it had to be, for you, it had to be a newer selection. And newer, older dividing line for us is the year 2000, essentially. So, like, anything from 1999 back is we consider old, and then 2000 to present is considered new. So, what'd you bring us this week?
I chose one that I've been kind of wanting to see for a little bit now. It came out in 2018. Just never got around to watching it yet. Tiana's seen it, but I hadn't. And she'd mentioned good things about it, but it's called Summer of 84.
Yeah, I hadn't seen it either, and it was one, just like you, that I had on my queue, right? You know, I had it sitting there on Shudder for probably, what, it's been 5 years, roughly, for the last four or 5 years. I've had it just sitting there on the queue, and I just, for whatever reason, I hadn't got around to watching it. But I remember even at the time hearing good things about it. So it was it was nice to finally, at the least, sit down and watch it. Now, we'll see whether we loved it or hated it or anything in between. At the end, we give our star ratings and our thoughts and all that stuff. And that's kind of what we do here on the Spook Show. I should throw it out right here from the beginning, because like I often say, we're not very good at doing this all the time. But if you're listening to us for the first time, we are a spoiler-filled podcast. So if for whatever reason you have not seen Summer of 84 up to this point, like smoking myself at least, you might want to go check it out. It's on Shudder, probably various other places. I'm sure you can buy it on video on demand. And I'm not sure if I got a Blu-ray or DVD release, but it probably at this point, that's what we have.
We have the 4K release.
So. There you go. So it does exist. So find it in various ways. Go check it out. You know, so hit pause, go check it out, and then come back and listen to the rest of this, because otherwise we're going to spoil it for you. But we need to be better about pointing that out, because I'm sure we've probably spoiled some shit for some people that were unaware until we started getting into the spoilers. And they're like, what the fuck? And then, you know, they have to pause it or stop it. So just to let you know. Also, we encourage you to visit aaspookshow.com. We call it the center of the Spook Show universe. From there, you can listen to all of our past podcast archives, all 203 actually previous episodes. They all live there. And you can also go to our YouTube channel from there, where every month over on our YouTube channel, we upload the podcast episodes, of course. We also have series Hammer Horror in Order, Video Vortex, Grindhouse Gutters. So we always got something new and interesting going on over there. And we also encourage you to become a patron. Patreon.com/AASpookShow. If you become a patron there at certain levels, every month you get a video minisode, including the Library of the Professor and also Crapster Peace Theater, where every month we put up a poll. You vote for four or five of the shittiest nominees we could think of. And then whatever the vote lands on, we are some combination of us are subjected to it. And you can only listen to that by going to patreon.com/AASpookShow. And you can find all of that stuff that we were just talking about once again at aaspookshow.com. So without any further buildup, we'll go ahead and toss to the trailer for Summer of 84.
The sheriff's office reports they're likely looking for a white male. Preferred targets appear to be males aged 12 to 16.
It's a serial killer.
The Cape May Chronicle received a letter from an individual calling themselves the Cape May Slayer.
There's a serial killer on the loose. What else could possibly be this exciting?
Incoming titties! 12 o'clock!
Guys, Nikki Keshuba. Scientifically the perfect woman.
Huh. Better view of my room than I thought. Silly dreams.
Emergency meeting. Treehouse. Now, Mackie is the Cape May Slayer.
Mackie's a cop with a sick reputation.
Wasn't counting on us. That's blood.
David.
Hey.
Guys, I'm freaking out, okay?
Relax. You look like you're 30. It's gonna be fine. Now go. You're gonna get caught either by Mackie or your dad.
I know I'm right about him.
That doesn't prove anything.
Are you with me?
I don't want anything bad to happen to you.
We're trying to save people.
Yeah, well, you're not.
Guys at the station are gonna love this.
Just let it go.
Sorry again if you're grounded. Let's see if I can get you out of this house. No hard feelings.
You were wrong. You were wrong about everything.
Even serial killers live next door to somebody.
All right, there you go. That's the trailer for that. So, like we talked about there briefly at the top, like this is the first time I had seen this. Tiana, what about you?
I've actually seen it a few times.
Okay. So that might be a hint or a clue as to where your star rating, maybe not the exact star rating, but, you know, you're probably going to lean towards the top of the pyramid, right? I will say this. This is a cool throwback, you know, to anybody that grew up in that time period, right, Smoke? Like, you know.
Yeah.
I think they nailed the time period aesthetic of the, you know, 1984 or whatever. Now, granted, I was only literally 4 years old in 1984, so I don't remember all the ins and outs. But I see enough here to, like, you know, this was kind of the way we grew up.
Yeah. It's funny. We were talking about on Missing in Action 2, which came out in 1985, but the first Missing in Action came out in 84. So we were talking about a very similar time period when we did that one.
You're right.
And how old you were when you saw that movie in the theater and everything. So, yeah, 1984, I was, if it depends. If it was before November, I was 10. If it was after November, then I was 11.
And especially for you, Smoke, because like I said, I was a little kid. You know, I would have been 4 in 84. I mean, this, as far as the ages of these kids in this movie, you're very close to their age, right?
Well, like, yeah, a little younger. They were, I think, a little bit older.
Yeah.
I think just a little bit older than I was. And I think they mentioned being about 15.
Roughly. I think 14, 15 years old, I think, is kind of what they're playing here. Yeah. So these are the kids that probably would have been born in the late 60s, early 70s. And, you know, now they're kind of coming to age here. You know, they're in that, you know, boys liking girls type age and all that. So that's kind of what this movie is about in a lot of ways.
Yeah. Yeah. It has that feel of like a Goonies, Monster Squad, Stand By Me sort of a teenager, kids, coming of age type story. Yeah. Or it even like it from what the novel would have came out well before, you know, the movie would have been 90, 91.
I think.
Yeah.
That many.
So yeah, that type of coming of age kids horror tale, which I think they nailed that pretty good. And we'll get into all that too. But I mean,
I can tell we're all kind of itching to get into that aspect of it and what our thoughts are on the movie and how it played out. So let's go ahead and get into the background so we can get into it. This movie debuted January 22nd of 2018 at the Sundance Film Festival and then was released, at least limited, in theaters on August 10th of 2018. And then it actually debuted as a Shudder exclusive and sometime in October of 2018. It was produced by Gunpowder and Sky and Bright Light Pictures and was also distributed by Gunpowder and Sky. It doesn't have a rating because, you know, it did only have like a limited release. And I think I saw where they had a lot of midnight shows when it did get that limited release. And so it's not rated, although you would easily say this is a rated R flick, if nothing else, because there's not a massive amount of gore or anything in the movie. But for nothing else, the language, right? You would think this would get an R rating.
Yeah, yeah.
total runtime of 1 hour and 45 minutes. On IMDb, it's listed as a horror mystery thriller. It was filmed in the Vancouver, British Columbia area in Canada, roughly around July to August of 2017. For best I could find, a budget of around $1.5 million. Now, because it did only play limited, the only number that I could find of any kind of gross worldwide was about $42,000. So not much there, although I'm sure they made their money back and then some by just being a Shudder exclusive, I would imagine. It was directed by kind of a creative collective, and it's called RKSS. Now, RKSS is an initialism for Roadkill Superstars, and it's a filmmaking trio of three Canadian film directors, Francois Simard, Anouk Whistle, and Johan Carl Whistle. And they also... their debut before this was a movie called Turbo Kid, which I've heard good things about, but I've never seen it myself.
Yeah, now that one I have seen, and I had forgot, or, you know, like I said, Tiana's seen this a few times before me. She probably told me in the past, but it was directed by the people that did Turbo Kid. And if I had known that, I might have chose, or if I had remembered that, I might have chose Turbo Kid first, just to get their first movie in before this one. But, you know, neither here nor there. They're not linked in any way other than the directors.
Yeah, like they actually had another movie that came out last year, which was a zombie horror movie called We Are Zombies, which I haven't seen that.
Yeah. But, yeah, I haven't seen that. I noticed it on IMDb. I'm like, oh, that looks interesting. Surely. Well, maybe, I mean, then we'll be caught up. We'll just do those three and then.
Yeah, there you go. We've done the RKSS trilogy. Now, apparently, though, they did a lot of, they're mostly known, I guess, you know, up until these movies of doing a lot of shorts. Because apparently they did one of the shorts for, I don't know if either of you have seen the ABCs of Death, where it was.
Oh, yeah.
They did one of the shorts for that. I think they did the letter T. T is for Turbo. Matter of fact, I think was their little, because remember the whole gimmick on that one was like, they literally went A through Z and each one was like, you know, A for asphyxiation, you know?
Yeah.
And like I said, T for Turbo and M is for murder and stuff. And like each little bit would be like somebody dying in that way kind of thing. Or, you know, it would have something to do with the way the person died. So yeah, they did that and they did a number of other things. And apparently there were a lot of similarities. Apparently they were just coincidental because this came out before that of this to Stranger Things.
Yeah.
so much so that I think there was some beef, or maybe they were kind of trying to say that one ripped off the other or something like that, right? I think I'd briefly read something about that, but you could see that though, right? Like, but apparently the original concept and everything of this was put together and written before Stranger Things, but because Stranger Things came out, I believe, in 2016, then I think they were trying to say that this kind of ripped that.
Well, you know what? That's a weird thing that happens quite often. And it used to happen more in the 80s, it seemed like. You remember how all those movies would come out? They would be almost come out at the same time. They had very similar themes, like the underwater movies. Like, I don't remember all the exact years, but like Abyss and Lords of the Deep and this, that. You know, there would be this thread that would be common. And then they would have this thing of whose was first or whatever. This might have been one of those things that just, you know, weird zeitgeist at the time. But really, though, I think it stems from the fact there's so much retro 80s stuff going on that it's inevitable that there'll be some similar things come out around the same time.
Well, apparently one of the direct results of the fact that Stranger Things kind of came out of nowhere, and it's hard to believe when you think about it now, but really when Stranger Things came out, it was kind of out of nowhere. Like, you know, I think people kind of like, we're like, oh, that looks kind of cool and interesting because of the time period that you could tell. But then when you know, it came out and then it took off, right? It became a fucking super mega hit for Netflix. But because of that success, and really it was so unexpected, they actually had to change one of the aspects of this movie that I saw, that apparently there was going to be some references to Dungeons and Dragons in this movie that they took completely out because of all the stuff from Stranger Things. So I think that was one of the consequences of that. I don't know. I don't think it was going to play that big a part, but I guess it was enough to where they're like, you know what, let's just pull that shit out because everybody's just going to think we're a direct rip of Stranger Things if we've got D&D going on here. So I think that was one of the consequences of that. But I did find that interesting, you know, now reading this stuff after I sat down and watched it, that, you know, that makes sense. That, you know, people would compare this to that, and especially, you know, you could put those things together, right? That might have been the case, but it wasn't.
Yeah.
The movie was written by Matt Leslie and Stephen J. Smith, and it stars Graham Verscher as Davey. He was also in Stargirl, and he had a small part in that recent Netflix miniseries, The Fall of the House of Usher. Judah Lewis, he's probably, outside of, you know, the guy that plays the cop, Mackie, Rich Summer, he's probably one of the better known faces, at least of fans of this type of stuff, right? You would notice Judah Lewis, he plays the role of Eats in this one. He's kind of the cool guy of the group, right? The guy that wears like the leather coat and all that. He was in The Babysitter and The Babysitter Killer Queen. You remember the sequel to that? Those were on Netflix. He was also in both those Christmas Chronicles movie with Kurt Russell. And he was... And he was most recently in Suitable Flesh, which I haven't seen yet, but I've heard good things about. Caleb Emery as Woody, you know, he's kind of the big kid. He had a pretty good run on the series Good Girls. Corey Gruder Andrew as Curtis. You may or may not recognize him from the movie Okja, O-K-J-A, Okja. Also, Nikki is played by Tierra Scovby. She had a really long run in the series the CW series Riverdale, and on the another series called Nurses. So she's probably a face. If you've seen either of those, you may recognize her. And then, of course, you've got Rich Sommer as Mackie. Now, he had a really long run on Mad Men, which obviously was a huge friggin' hit, you know, decade or so ago. And he was also in the movie The Devil Wears Prada, among many other movies and television series. But those would probably be the ones that you may recognize him most from. I guess before we dive into it, that's about all I had. Did either of you have anything else you wanted to point out?
Well, one thing was that who was the kid that you mentioned that was the big kid?
That was Caleb Emery as Woody.
Caleb Emery was, most of the kids in the movie were about the age they were supposed to be playing in the movie, but he was like 25 years old, apparently.
And I could believe that too, just looking at his filmography on IMDb, because he's done quite a bit of things.
Yeah. And they even kind of make a joke that was probably a reference to that in the movie when he's driving the car, when they kind of borrow, quote unquote, his mom's car.
Yeah.
When they're stalking the guy, you know, as we'll get into with the plot or whatever, but they say, you know, the kid's in the car, and I think it's Eats in the back seat that says, you know, don't worry about it. You look like you're 30 anyways or something.
Yeah,
No, funny 30 or something to that effect. You know?
Yeah.
was a reference to the fact that he was 25 and overall.
And totally believable, too, just in the sense of this movie that, like, he is, like, a foot taller than everybody else. So it would, you know, make sense that he's the one, right?
Yeah. But, I mean, I think he did a good job. I mean, yeah, he looks a little older, but I think he did a good job at, I guess, playing a younger kid.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, you, if you didn't know that, I don't think you'd right away say, oh, yeah, he's like, you know, he's got 8 to 10 years on these guys. You wouldn't know that.
I don't know if you saw this in your, you know, looking up information, referencing or whatever, but Summer of 42.
Mm-hmm.
There was a movie or a book called Summer of 42 that has a similar plot to a certain degree of like kids.
Yeah,
doing something, that. Detective work or something like that. I don't think it was a serial killer in that one, but it was basically a similar, very similar plot. So I don't know what the deal was on that. I don't know if there was that, if they actually acknowledged that, or if this was just, it was all the IMDb trivia thing.
Huh.
But yeah, did y'all notice this is a kind of a deep pull, and it's somewhat of a reference to 1984 in a roundabout way. There was two references, or there was another reference to 84, was I think one of the patches on each jacket. And I couldn't verify this, but it looked like it to be, I don't know if you ever seen the cover to Survivor's album, Vital Signs. Mm-hmm. It's a 1984 album, which is why I thought this was probably a reference. It's just a V that looks like the waveform monitor that monitors your heart, your vital signs, you know, like the album.
Yeah.
It was like a V for the vital signs, I guess, like a waveform V. Mm-hmm. And on the back of his jacket was a green V like that album cover. But I just couldn't see it well enough to see if that was what it was, but with it being a 1984 album and this movie being Summer of 84, probably was.
Mm-hmm.
Another, but much deeper cut than that, though, was, did y'all notice in the arcade scene, there was a game called Polybius in the background?
I did notice that. It stood out, but I didn't remember that being a thing or not. Was it?
It was. Well, kind of. The name struck me, you know, like, I knew that name. I'm like, what is it? There was something about it. And then I had to look it up after the movie. And this all came back to me. It was a fake game, really. It was a hoax that was going around. It was supposedly a 1981 video game called Polybius that had psychoactive properties of what, when you played it, it gave you like a psychoactive feeling or whatever, and it made you addicted to playing it more. And there's apparently stories of people lining up to play this Polybius and people getting in fights over who was playing it next and all this. And then also there's this whole thing of it being like a government conspiracy thing that these government men in black type agents would come into these arcades and like take the information from, you know, whatever information they gleaned from, I guess it was recording these kids' activities as they were playing, you know, the psychoactive thing to their heads that it was doing and the addictive properties. And then they glean whatever information they could from this and do whatever they were going to do with this information. It was this urban legend or whatever, basically. But apparently the game never did exist. I think after the fact, people have made Polybius type, you know, those games where you can just make them or whatever and just... They made something for it, but it never existed back in 1981. I guess it was just a big urban legend. But the tie in to 1984 with this is that the last Starfighter movie is believed to have been influenced by that urban legend because, as you know, the last Starfighter, it's alien race that's like sent this game down to Earth to record kids playing it, and whoever had the best highest score on it, they would use to, you know. You think about this now, it's like, this is a weird plot. These aliens went out of their way to create these video games to put them on Earth to find fighter pilots, right? But sort of like that, like the government agents, whatever they were doing with this Polybius game, gleaning information from it to whatever ends they wanted to use it for, and versus the aliens putting this last Starfighter game down here on, you know, on Earth and gleaning information to find fighter pilots to help them in their cause against the aliens they were fighting,
right?
So, and that was a 1984 movie. So that's a very roundabout reference to another 1984 thing. So it was, that was a very deep 80s reference cut, though.
Once again, getting into the minutia of the deep cuts. Deep, deep cuts.
Yeah.
So what you're saying is this is one of the games that were in that game room in the Dixie Boy truck stop in Maximum Overdrive.
I wonder if it was. Yeah, I haven't looked up. I haven't looked to see if there, if the Polybius game has shown up in other places. I bet it.
Yeah,
it well may have, because it wasn't. If it ever did,
it would be in that damn truck stop arcade where you remember it. The machines attacked the dude. Yeah. They're playing the pinball or whatever. The
Mr. Projectionist, stop the show. Here's great news you ought to know. We've just got a shipment of Taste Thrill treats, all tip top quality and delicious eats. There are hot dogs and popcorn and candy galore. There's soft drinks and coffee and a whole lot more. So direct your steps to our refreshment stand to enjoy the finest snacks in all the land.
For you, the listeners of the All-American Spook Show podcast, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you the opportunity to check out their service. So I went over to audible.com, and this time I just typed in 80s to see what would pop up. And not as many results as you would think, but still some pretty interesting one here. We've got 1980s trivia. Trivia and facts for families, kids, adults, road trips, and fun by A.H. Coulter. And that one is a little over an hour long. So I guess if you're on a road trip, be a fun little thing to do. This one sounds pretty interesting, Smug. It was right up your alley. If you haven't read it or not, this just sounds like something you would like. Satanic Panic, an homage to 80s B-movie horror by Daniel P. Coughlin. And that one's over 7 hours long. So, may have to find a copy of that one or pull it up on use your Audible trial to listen to it, right?
Yeah. I love anything to do with that type of thing, whether it's the horror, the heavy metal stuff that was, you know, caught up in the whole satanic panic of the 80s was an interesting time to grow up in and to go back and revisit nostalgia wise, too.
And it's got a cool 80s type of cover to it, too. So, you go check that. It's called Satanic Panic. So, go check that one out by Daniel P. Coughlin. So, if any of that sounds like it floats your boat, go check it out by going to audibletrial.com/spookshow. Again, that's audibletrial.com/spookshow for your free audiobooks. And now I'm going to go back over to imdb.com and find plot summaries to see if they've got any good one. Boy, just like last week when we did Missing in Action 2, there's not any. There's just one, like, you know, the general synopsis that they put up for every movie on IMDb. After suspecting that their police officer neighbor is a serial killer, a group of teenage friends spend their summer spying on them and gathering information. But as they get closer to discovering the truth, things get dangerous. But there's not a lot there, but I think it gets the point of what the movie is. I mean, like, because I will say right out the gate, if there's one thing I have kind of a complaint about here, you know, and I don't have a lot of complaints because I did enjoy it overall, I think. But I feel that this movie was slow as owl shit. Like, it didn't really feel like much of anything in particular was going on for damn near an hour in this movie. And then maybe that's just that 80s nostalgia thing. Like, I think, like, once, in my mind, once I kind of get past that 80s nostalgia thing, it's like, all right, well, just give me something interesting. And I'm not saying it wasn't interesting. It's just kind of predictable in a way. You kind of saw some of these things coming, you know? So it's like, and then they tried to throw some twist in there, but it was, you kind of saw through it. Kind of thing. So, like, I don't know. I'm not going to say uninteresting or uneventful or anything. It just seemed like it was really slow for so much. And I only say that right here on Front Street when we're going into it, because there's no big moments to talk about here until you get to some of those things, right? Because it starts off in June of 1984. There's a serial killer apparently on the loose. They're calling him the Cape May Slayer. That's, I guess, because that's the name of the town they live in, right? Like Cape May or something, right? So there's a serial killer called the Cape May Slayer that's on the loose. And Davey, there's these four friends, because you got the formula, right, from Stand By Me and a lot of the 80s movies. Like, it's very Spielberg-esque, right? You got the formula of, like, four boys, group of four, hanging out in the summer. They also, or the one is kind of the leader of the group. His name's Davey. He suspects that they're one of their neighbors, who's a cop, named Mackie, is the serial killer. So they literally, like I said in the synopsis there, spend the whole summer like gathering evidence and spying on him to prove that he's the serial killer, right? Literally almost everything I just explained is about the first hour of the movie. There's moments, right? But there's no particular moments to point out and say, well, remember this part or that part, like we usually do when we talk about these. So I know I've said a lot here, but what do you guys think?
I guess I'll go next because I know Gianna will have more to say about it maybe than I will. Oh, because, you know, she's seen it more times than I. And, you know, I'll let you know her, you know, particular affinity for certain things or whatever. But I could see where now, knowing this is directed by the same people that did Turbo Kid, and if you had seen Turbo Kid, this is a 180 movie from that. Well, not completely 180 because both movies are very 80s retro. And both have synthwave soundtracks. And by the way, that's one of my favorite aspects of any throwback 80s movie that has a synthwave soundtrack. I'm going to be on board with that.
They did do a really good, and I'll agree with that. They did a great job on the soundtrack, not just with the synth feel, you know, the synth soundtrack, the backdrop music, but also like the drops, you know, like Cruel Summer, you know, dropped in there and other pop songs of the 80s, right?
Yeah, and Tiana probably has something to say about that part too, as far as Cruel Summer. So I'll let her.
That's an Easter egg. Yeah.
Okay. Well, that makes sense.
Yeah. Because you know that
they were riding bikes.
Yep. And that can't be the only thing, too, right? Like that song seems like it's been played a lot in these 80s types of movies.
Yeah.
In the 80s and these type of, you know, retro 80s movies.
Yeah.
It's just a go-to for, you know, summer movies.
Well, yeah, it's to play on the fact of summer of 84, summertime that's taking place in a Cruel Summer linking to it. Yeah. Same thing with Karate Kid, I guess, because it was in the summertime and it was, but the direct reference of the BMX bike that Daniel LaRusso was riding in the scene and the BMX, so it was a very direct placement of the song in this movie. Yes. But like you said, it's probably been used in multiple 80s movies before, but also the connection of the BMX bikes. That is another connection with Turbo Kid too, because Turbo Kid, the BMX thing is a huge part of that movie. And that also is another reference to a movie we've done on the podcast, which was also 1984, I believe. I take that back. It's 1986. Rad.
Oh, yeah. The Summer of Ass Sliding.
Yeah. Ass Sliding. Yes. That is a huge part of Turbo Kid. In fact, they even used that the song from Rad and Turbo Kid. It wasn't Break the Ice. It was the other one. I can't remember the name of it right now. But
I think I need to see Turbo Kid. That's what I think.
Yeah. Like I said, if I had thought about it, I would have chose that one first, and then we would come to this one. Because other than the retro 80 stuff, but like I was saying a little while ago, it's a 180 from that movie, because that movie throws everything at you. Yeah, it's a post-apocalyptic movie. Yeah. It throws in Rad. It throws in, like, you got the synth wave by this movie, but it's a more upbeat synth wave with vocals and all that. Yeah, very, very retro 80s. Everything thrown at you. Even like the, what was the glove called? The Nintendo glove thing?
The Power Glove.
The Power Glove. The Power Glove even plays a crucial role in the movie.
Yeah.
So it's like very 80s and in your face and action sort of packed and all that stuff. And this movie, I guess they were wanting to kind of pull back and do something totally different. And it is kind of a slow burn. It does have the kids going around doing the, like we said, the coming of age where you can Stand By Me, It, et cetera, et cetera. So you got that. But yeah, it is kind of a slow burn building up to what happens in the climax of the movie. Totally opposite of Turbo Kid. But I mean, I enjoyed that. I thought they were good. For this being a super micro budget movie, well, I don't know about super micro. I don't know what the budget is on the movie, but it's definitely low budget. Might not have been micro budget.
Best that I could tell, and I talked about that a little bit ago with the info, was $1.5 million. But that was kind of an unofficial number, though, to be fair. Like, I never found, you know, from my usual sources, an actual official budget. But that's the number that I found, was $1.5 million.
Which, yeah, that's definitely not a micro budget. It's a decent little budget. You know, for a movie these days,
absolutely.
Like, that's, you're not even paying the actors, even in a low budget movie. Or, I mean, in a semi low budget movie, $1.1 million is not going to get you a whole lot. So,
yeah,
considering that's what the budget was, I thought the actors were all pretty good as far as the main actors in the movie. There might be some few extras and things over here that were kind of, you know, whatever. But the main kids in the movie did a good job.
Like, the story just didn't grab me enough, and it just felt too slow to finally get to stuff happening, you know. But I will say, you know, the pros are the cast was great. I thought they did a really great job of the cast here. You know, like, you really cared about these kids, you know, like, so they did a good job of character development to get you there to where you care about, you know, in particular, Davey, right? And his next door neighbor, Nikki, the girl, you know, that, you know, the love interest, whatever, you know. So, like, you care about these characters and all that. And so, I mean, like, so it's kind of, for me, on one hand, it's like, well, you know, it's a good job of writing and bringing it together character development wise, but the story just felt like something I've seen before and just felt too familiar and predictable for me.
Yeah, I know, you know, the lead up to what you think, you know, we'll get to the plot more in depth here in a little bit, but it kind of leads you in a certain direction where you think that it's going to be this way, but then you think, no, it's too easy to be that way. They're going to throw some twists in it to make it be something else. And I didn't know. I went into this like I usually do, trying not to find out anything about it.
Yeah.
So I wasn't sure, knowing that, you know, Turbo Kid stuff and all that, I wasn't sure if it was going to be a supernatural type thing. Mm-hmm. You know, that what they were hunting, because he was a conspiracy theorist kind of kid, was interested in UFOs and all this stuff. I didn't know if they were maybe going to go some sort of supernatural route. You know, so then I'm thinking that in the back of my head that, you know, it's not going to be what you're thinking it is, but what they're leading you, the path they're leading you down, it's kind of too easy for it to be that.
Yeah.
And then you're like, maybe it's this. No, no, it's not that. And then things start happening with that, because I don't want to get into the details.
Yeah, but then it turns out it's exactly what you kind of figured is along the way. It never takes a turn. Right. And I think that's kind of one of the problems I had with it. That too, like the feel of it and that poster, it's a really good poster. I don't know if you know, either of you have seen it, you know, the poster short. It really feels that makes it to me feel like a slasher. Like summer of 84, you get the bloody milk carton with the skull on the you know, on the milk carton, you know, with the missing kid, it's a skull. It's a cool poster, but it feels like an 80s slasher to me. Then when you start watching it, you realize, no, this ain't a slasher. Maybe it's going to take a turn somewhere, but this ain't a slasher. You know, there's some slasher elements, but this ain't a slasher, you know?
Yeah, I think they promoted various, I guess, because one that I'm actually looking at right now is the theatrical release poster, and it doesn't quite make, it makes it look more like a sort of a Goonies type thing, because it's got Summer of 84 in red across the top and like a cloudy sky and the house. Mm-hmm. With a light in the window, and then it's got four kids outside the house with flashlights. So that definitely doesn't make it seem, that seems more like it promoted it as what it was.
Yeah.
You know, the kids, throwback to the 80s, kids coming of age kind of thing. You don't really get the gist of it being a slasher movie.
Yeah, I see that poster. Yeah, I see that poster you're talking about there. Yeah, that has more of a Spielberg-esque feel to it, Goonies type of. Yeah,
definitely. But like, I've seen the milk carton one you're talking about too.
And I think that's the one that they put on Shudder, if I'm not mistaken. And that looks like a slasher to me, you know, like an 80s slasher. So that's, you said it there, is almost misrepresenting what the movie actually is with that poster versus the other one. Not that that's that big a deal. It's not the end all be all. But when you see those kind of things, it kind of, whether you like it or not, you get that subconscious of expectation from those type of things. And what I expected is not what we got necessarily, you know, but maybe that's my fault, right? Not in a bad way though. I'm giving all the cons to save the pros for later, you know, but like, it's a really slow burn, you know, but I think once you get there though, you know, it's pretty good. And we'll get into the end here in a second, but boy, yikes. But eventually Davey, you know, we've explained it up to this point. We're literally about an hour into the movie. Davey eventually, like, you know, they feel they've got enough evidence to pin it on Mackie. So they tell his parents, and his parents are like, no, you're going to go apologize to him for breaking into his house and all this other shit that you did. So, like, it completely blows up in their face. They get in trouble for it. And, you know, meanwhile, they tell him, like, yeah, we think you're the killer. And he said, what? This is crazy. And then right after that, Mackie catches or arrests a guy who they say is the killer. Now, that's one part, too, they don't really explain, is like, what was the evidence that led to this guy, right? Like, they're just like, I guess they just, you know, the police department, he fools the police department into thinking, like, this is the guy. I guess somehow, you know, and they didn't show any of this, that he's planted enough evidence or is able to pin it on this guy. So they're not even looking his way, right? He arrests the guy himself, and he goes from being a suspect to all of a sudden he's the hero, right? But they didn't explain. You never saw that guy other than like a picture on the news or something like that where they're explaining, yeah, they got this guy. It's over. It would have been easy, right, to throw a scene in there like, here's how he did it kind of thing. You know, but they never do that, right?
Nah.
Well, Davey and, you know, a couple of his friends, they're still not completely convinced. They still want to go find some evidence. So they break into his house and they go down into the basement, I think it was, right? And they open up a room and they find a body, which looks like it was like fucking stripped of its skin or something. I don't know what the hell he had done to this body in a tub. And then there's one of the missing, another one of the missing, like, teenage boys is still in there, like, chained up or whatever, tied up, whatever he is. He's been held captive in there, but he's still alive. So they managed to get him out and then, you know, go to the cops. And now the cops are like, well, this is, you know, they got it on video too, right? They took a video camera in there. So they have irrefutable evidence now that Mackie is the one. He's done this. But Mackie's nowhere to be found because they haven't caught Mackie yet. You think it's pretty much over. Well, Mackie kidnaps Davey and Woody, and then he takes them out of the woods. He kind of has like a cat and mouse kind of chase around the woods a little bit, right? Kind of on purpose. And then looks like Woody's about to get away, and then he knocks him down, comes up from behind him, and slashes his throat. So now Woody's dead, and I think he cut the back of Davey's heel so he couldn't run, right? Like he could barely move or run. But then he comes up to Mackie catches up to Davey and then basically is like, yeah, I'm not going to kill you. I want you to live the rest of your life knowing that I'm going to come for your ass. And you're not going to go, you're not going to know when, you're not going to go know where, but I'm coming. Just live with the fact that I'm coming for you. Then leaves him there in the woods to think about that. And you see a little bit of the aftermath of them, you know, like things have changed now, you know, and leaves Davey to worry about it the rest of his life. The end. So I'm like, holy shit. That is a dark ending from hell, right?
Yeah. Well, they had a lot of build up before you get to that part. But like you're saying, it's the slow burn aspect, I guess, of them trying to do the detective work. And then you have, so, you know.
Well, it's them. I mean, they're already bonded, but they bond more together.
Yeah. And this,
and then, Each child has a situation that's going on in the household that you figure out.
Yeah.
So it makes more of that punch in the gut at the end of the movie.
Well, yeah, because you got the kid who's the eats, and you got his brother, and you mentioned that Stranger Things connection. The brother, his brother with the Camaro reminds me of, and I can't think of the guy's name from Stranger Things.
Yeah, I know.
Billy. Yeah, Billy.
Yeah, the brother and sister, they kind of have the same relationship in Stranger Things.
Yeah, in the car.
But their parents
have this, you know, they're.
Oh, yeah, they have
is always wanting to, you know, like, can I spend a night over here?
Yeah, and that is one of the themes of the movie from beginning to end, literally, is that you don't know how people are in their house with the windows closed.
Yeah.
Right? That's the theme of the movie.
Yeah. In the very beginning of the movie and the end wraps it up that way. I think they repeat it twice, right? In the beginning, they talk about the suburb, the strangest things happen in the suburb type thing. You never know what goes on in people's houses type thing. And then they say that in the beginning, and then they get into the storylines and things and whatever. And then at the end,
you see it again.
That repeats itself. He says it again. And then he's going through all the stuff, like you said, whenever.
And you see how his life has changed over the summer, like as far as from that, when he's delivering the paper at the beginning of the movie and then delivering the paper at the end of the movie, you know, how all of his relationships, you know, he's lost his friend Woody, and all of his relationships are probably just gone to shit now that all this has happened. And now he's going to have to live with this the rest of his life. One thing that I'll point out, you know, because I think this is part of the conversation, there was and is no intentions to make another movie. There never was an intention to make a sequel to this, and never, you know, I guess probably never will be.
So how? Yeah, I guess they just leave you with that.
Yeah. With so that how, so like, how you know, fucked up is so how fucked up is that?
Yeah, that was definitely a twist you didn't really see. That's something you didn't really see coming. The ending part of the movie, because up to that point, it's sort of happy-go-lucky sort of coming of age, these kids. I mean, yeah, these things are going on in their lives, but nothing super dark. Other than, you know, there's a serial killer thing, but you get the gist that he's on the trail of them.
Yeah, and that they'll eventually catch him and they'll be okay.
Yeah. And then the dad, you know, he tells the dad, but they tell the dad when they don't quite have the evidence they really need, you know. They have a little bit that they think is enough, so they go to the dad. Of course, the dad's going to make them. He says, this is all but. No, you got to go up there and you got to march up. I'm going to take you over there and you got to apologize. You're going to tell me why.
Like I said, that completely blew up in their face. But I will say that the fact that, like, that ending, and then that I read that, like, yeah, there was never an intention to make another one, and it doesn't sound like they're ever going to make another one. That makes it even darker to me.
That
it gains a whole, I ain't going to say a whole another level of star rating for me or whatever, but, like, it makes it bump it up a little bit for me from what it would have been. at that moment to that. I'm going to go a little higher when we get to the ratings. But yeah, I mean, like, that's the impact of this movie, I think, is that. Mm-hmm. Because I think everything else is just like, well, okay, I've seen the 80s retro shit. You know, like, I lived it, right? You know, we all, you know, our age group, we lived it. We know what this was like. Yeah, I get the retro thing. But, like, at some point, like, you know, that kind of wears thin a little bit. We've seen so much of it over the last decade with the 80s retro stuff. I'm not going to say it gets old, but it's kind of like, all right, you know, like I said, I lived it. I know what to expect. I've seen it. Let's get something new, right? So that's
sometimes with these types of movies, I didn't really necessarily get it with this one that much, but sometimes when I'm watching the retro 80s movies, it's like, why can't I just, I feel like I should just be watching an 80s movie.
Yeah.
Not just watching a movie about the 80s. I didn't really get that necessarily with this movie after that. I mean, it helped.
Yeah, I like when they do that because especially when they've been doing it like this movie.
We're
set in the '80s and shit.
Yeah, when you get it right, it's like Stranger Things in that. Yeah,
you know, just little smart ass comments that they make throughout the whole movie.
Yeah, the way they're talking to each other.
It's funny as hell.
Yeah, the way they're talking to each other, like you could truly tell these are some people that grew up in that time period because like. People don't talk like that anymore. You know, we'll just leave it there, right? We don't need to get into the ins and outs of it. A lot of people these days don't talk like that anymore, but that's kind of the way we talked growing up. You know, that was just the way it was. The way we talked shit to each other and what we said and all that kind of stuff. So I didn't even know that part of it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, I think it's an entertaining flick, but I think, you know, if it hadn't been for that ending, it's one that would have been, honestly, for me, it would have been probably fairly forgettable. You know, that was what it was, but, you know, I would have moved on pretty quickly. But that one kind of stuck with you a little bit, the way they ended that, because it went some places you didn't think they would go, you know. I'll tell you another movie that I was just thinking of that it reminded me of a lot. Now, you know, and you said a minute ago inadvertently, we were talking about Suburbs. The Burbs.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
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 That's what this reminds, you know, in a less comical way, right?
Yeah.
I think this movie probably would have been better suited if they had have leaned into the comedy aspect a little bit more, made it feel a little bit more Goonies-esque. Because there's a feeling of that there, but it ain't all the way there. You know what I mean?
I guess they didn't want to go that way.
I can't entirely hold that against them, but it might have been better served if there had been a little bit more of that. I don't know. Maybe. Who knows? Gotta love the dark.
When it hits that part, when they're starting to discover the things in the bat and the room in the house thing or whatever with the photos on the wall and the bathtub and the corpse in the bathtub, and then all that lead up to what's his name getting his throat slit, and then the darkest other ending of where he doesn't know where the guy's going to come after him at some point,
yeah,
the rest of his life or whatever. All of that whole twist at the end was, like you said, it takes you, they didn't go down the path of humor like the Goonies so much. But they did have that camaraderie together and that, you know, they're like a Hardy Boys. In fact, there was a scene where one of the kids was reading a book of the Hardy Boys.
Yeah. Yeah.
I guess that's another somewhat reference in there where they're kind of acting like the Hardy Boys on a bit more of a R-rated serial killer rather than, you know, the Hardy Boys weren't really going as killers necessarily.
I just think with the slow burn and the fact that the total runtime was 1:45, I think you could have easily shaved about 15, 20 minutes off this movie and I would have felt a little better about it. That's just me. You could have had the same character arcs and some of that character building they had in that first 45 minutes to an hour of it. You know, trim a little bit of that out, tighten it up a little bit. It probably would have been a little better for me. But, hey, you know, like I said, pick a niche, you know. That's half of our job here, right?
Did you notice the whiskey Easter egg?
I do remember there being some. They drank the whiskey or whatever. What was that?
Well, it was the name of it was, I didn't catch it when we were watching it, but yeah, looked at it afterwards. But McCrady's.
Okay.
McCrady. That was the thing to the thing.
Yeah.
Okay.
I was hoping you were going to say it was like Tenafly or something. What?
Yeah, I definitely would have called it that.
I would have
McCrady's. I should have known that too, but it wasn't really, you know, it didn't really.
Me either. But like, yeah, if it had been Tenafly something, yeah, I would have, oh my God.
Did they blow up? No.
The only movies that makes a street trash reference to it, that would have been nice.
Yeah, then all of them just blow up after they drink it, and that's the end of the credits roll.
Yeah. And then a dick flies by. Spoiler alert for street trash, huh?
also, they didn't really get into this part, but when he went to the storage unit and got the Volkswagen Bug out.
Hmm. Was that,
drove that Ted Bundy.
Yeah. I was about to say, yeah, Bundy. I couldn't think of the serial killer. Yeah. I was thinking that was a direct reference. It has to be, right?
Yeah.
Somebody.
That must have been part of the unexplained pinning it on that other guy.
Maybe. Yeah.
It has to be, right?
Yes.
Somebody had a stretch though. I saw where, you know, it's like part of the trivia thing on IMDb, I think. But it was this person and somebody like obviously didn't grow up at this time. I think they must have just put this on there because whatever they saw it, and they know, and maybe they just watched the Jeffrey Dahmer thing on Netflix or whatever. I don't know. But they said the kid's name that wore the glasses, and I don't remember his name right now. I'm terrible with names unless I've seen the movie.
I think it was Curtis you're talking about.
Curtis, yeah, the glasses. And this person said that was putting the trivia on there that he had the same type of making, whatever you call him, make. I don't know if you use the words making model of glasses, but same type of glasses as Jeffrey Dahmer. I'm like, every kid in the 80s and early 90s had the same type of glasses.
That's a deep pull if that's true. Like, if there's any truth to that, that's like, all right, now you're getting into the minutia. You're getting too deep. Pull out. Yeah, I mean,
the scene where he cleans his room and he's looking in the closet at the old walkie-talkie.
Oh, yeah. You know, I'm almost positive I had those damn G.I. Joe walkie-talkies.
I guess there was a little figure from Turbo Kid in there.
Okay.
The old action figure. Turbo Kid action figure.
Once again, I really need to see Turbo Kid.
There's definitely a bunch of course, as you expect, a bunch of 80s. Well, that wasn't an 80s reference. That was their own movie reference. But there's a bunch of 80s references when it comes to these type of movies. We already mentioned Rad, which kind of, you know, the whole BMX thing and the Karate Kid thing.
I mean, like, dude, we could literally sit here for probably another 30 minutes comparing, you know, like, oh, it's this movie. I mean, like, but that, you know, that is the pro and the con, the good and the bad of this type of thing is, like, they're clearly directly lifting a lot from the 80s and stuff like that, you know. So, like, some of that's to be understood, and then others is kind of like, okay, I've seen this before, you know. But, like, I think it comes together for a pretty good stew of a movie, you know, that does in the end stick with you, although not, for me, entirely memorable, but the ending, the last little bit, is what I'll take away from it. So I'll, you know, as far as that's concerned, I'll leave it there. But Smoke, I guess we'll start with you. What are your final thoughts and what's your star rating on it?
I enjoyed it for what it was. I'm kind of a sucker for Dio 80s throwback type stuff, but not, like I said, not completely all the way on board with them sometimes, because they're, you know, I just come across sometimes watching them. It's like, yeah, I should just be watching an 80s movie instead of a Dio throwback 80s.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I think when they're done, I think this was done well as far as, like we said, the look of the movie. Everybody, they're acting well. You know, you don't get the gist of these lines around. I mean, I thought they were comfortable with themselves, you know, together as an ensemble kind of cast, and with the 80s feel of the, you know, the dialogue that they had to say and all that stuff. They didn't come across as being, you know, these millennials or whatever, throwing around 80s lines. I mean, they did good acting with that. And the look of the, or Gen Z, I should say now, whatever it is. But the look of everything, too, felt like, you know, the makes and models of the cars and all these things. It felt like Stranger Things does. It feels like an 80s time period that you're in. It doesn't feel like they're, like, stretching things to, like, some of these movies do get, and Tiana mentioned this earlier, I believe, that some of these throwback 80s movies have a very throwback feel to them. Like, you feel like you're watching a movie that doesn't have, they're using the lingo, and they got some of the backdrop and some of the references get thrown around, but you still don't feel like you're watching an 80s movie or whatever.
Yeah.
This one, I thought they did a good job with that, putting you in that time period. So I can give it kudos for that, because whenever I'm watching a throwback to 80s type movie, I want it to do that rather than the opposite, which is making you feel like you're watching a fake 80s movie.
Yeah.
And so there's too many of them that fall into that, that made me just wish I was watching an 80s movie instead of this fake 80s one. But I didn't get that with this movie. I could see where you said it's like a slow burn a little bit. It takes you in places where you think you're going to go this way or that way, and then it goes exactly where you were thinking it was going to go. But you were thinking that it's too easy for it to go that direction, because it couldn't possibly be this guy because it's too easy, right?
Yeah.
But then the more the movie goes along, they keep pointing that direction. And, you know, the kid, to believe anything else would be to think this little kid's just a conspiracy theorist liar or whatever.
Yeah.
Because he's so adamant about this guy being the one that if it's not, then you're like, damn, that's, you know, what's the matter with this kid or whatever.
Yeah.
So they keep pointing that direction. So, you know, actually, I kept thinking at some point it's going to be something. Is it a werewolf? This stuff?
Yeah.
Is it? Yeah, because there was some silver bullet references I thought in there, like seemed like for a bit, you know, with them tracking this guy, kind of like the guy in Silver Bullet when they found out the priest was, you know, was the werewolf or whatever. Spoiler alert for anybody who hasn't seen Silver Bullet.
Damn it, what have you done?
So, yeah, I enjoyed it. I mean, you know, it's not going to be at the top of my list when I get my, give my star rating, but I did enjoy it for what it was. It was, I said, they got the 80s aspect right. The cast was good together. I thought, I love coming of age type movies with teens coming, you know, it reminds, especially set in the 80s because it reminds me of my childhood.
Yeah.
Same way as It. Now, It, 1990s movie, started in the 50s. And when they were adults, they were in the 80s, right?
Yep.
So new It, when it came out, started with kids in the 80s. And then it moved ahead to 25 or whatever years.
Yeah.
Like so,
present day.
Yeah. Present day. So yeah, I love those, you know, throwback movies of kids growing up in the 80s because of that nostalgia, I guess, because of me growing up in the 80s. So, and I thought they got that right. So I love the ending, of course, the climax or the lead up to the climax and the actual final climax of the movie was, as we said, dark and definitely takes a turn there, and it really, you really set up paying attention. If like you said, you lost a little bit of interest at the beginning parts of the movie, you definitely peaked up at that turning point in the movie, as I mentioned with the bathtub, when they discover this stuff that this guy really is, you know, we've already, you know, this is not a spoiler, but you know, we've already gone over the whole plot. But when you find out that he is the killer, and then everything else from that point on to the end of the movie pretty much keeps you riveted then, and you're like, damn, it went down that path. It's pretty dark. So, yeah, all that being said, I'll give it solid 3 stars. I would definitely watch it again.
I mean, I agree with a lot of what you said. I'm just going to slide it down just a little bit because I think it just takes so damn long to get to the good stuff that, like, it kind of takes away from that a little bit. So if it hadn't been for the last part and the ending, I would have rated it lower. But I'm going to go with 2.5. I think it's fair for me on my scale. That, and it's not a bad 2.5, you know what I mean? Like, I think that's still fair middle ground type of stuff. It's a solid flick. It's well made. Like you said, they nailed the aesthetic of 1984, you know, that time period and everything. The soundtrack's great. I think the cast is pretty damn good. They got a fairly good chemistry. It just takes so damn long. You know, it's just like, man, if you, like I said before, if you shave 15, 20 minutes off this, I think I would have been, me personally, I think I would have enjoyed it a lot better, but still solid 2.5 stars. Glad we watched it. I don't know if it's something I would pull to watch over and over again because once you've seen it, you've kind of seen it, but not saying I would never watch it again, but probably not something I would watch often, but I think it's a pretty good pull. So Tiana, since this was your pick, we'll let you have the last word on it. What do you say?
That was Brian's pick.
Oh.
Oh, yeah.
Well, since you love the movie so much, we'll let you have the last word on it. So
I was like, wait a minute. Well, Brian took most of my thoughts out of my brain. Yeah, I think everything's set up well done, and the actors are, for a, you know, indie film, very phenomenal. The synth wave soundtrack was perfect because it was that darker tone.
Mm-hmm. By the way, while we're mentioning that, all of us love the soundtrack. That might as well give credit to it. It's Lematos, is the L-E-M-A-T-O-S, Lematos.
Okay.
They did the soundtrack for Turbo Kid as well. So yeah, great synthwave artist.
There you go.
The Santa Barbara albums.
Summer of 84, that was the movie.
Yeah, I love it because it's probably because I love thrillers. And this is more of a thriller, I guess you could say.
For sure, yeah.
Because nothing does really happen, but I guess it's that build up that they're trying to work.
It definitely does, now that you say that, it definitely does lean more mystery thriller than it does horror.
Yeah.
I think that Hardy Boys reference, the kid reading the book of the Hardy Boys is kind of a giveaway there a little bit. Remember that?
Yeah.
When I was reading a Hardy Boys book at one point. This very much plays like an adult version of a Hardy Boys mystery.
Yeah.
But I'm going to give it 3 stars.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not going to argue. I think we're all kind of saying the same things in different ways. Smoke, you and Tiana give it 3 stars. I give it 2.5 stars. Donnie was not able to be here, but he did give us his rating. And what he had to say about it was 2 stars. The only comments that he gave on it was, it has some nostalgic elements. It's predictable and nothing surprises you. So really a lot of what we've said here, he says it's not horrible, but it's not good either. So two stars. I think once again, go ahead.
I know that Donnie's ratings is if he rates something, I know that he'll never watch this again.
Yeah.
Because his criteria is it has to be 3 stars for him to be something repeat watching. Right?
Yeah.
Right. I believe it is.
Just based on those comments and what I know about him, he's probably saying kind of the same thing I'm saying, except he's probably not giving quite as much credit for the ending, you know, that it was
like the ending surprised him and all.
Yeah. I think that the part what happened was not surprising. I think the two moments in the end that surprised me were the fact that he did slit that kid's throat, Woody.
Yeah.
And the fact that he did not kill the other one. The one that he has total motivation to kill, he does not kill and then says, I'm coming for you later in life. Like, man, that's some high level fuckery from this dude, you know?
And that right there is where it breaks from the 80s mold and where you have the more modern horror mold is like, and if this were a real, truly an 80s movie, it would have ended with him getting his comeuppance, you know?
Yeah.
He would have been either killed or caught, one or the other.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it wouldn't have been him tracking the, you know, the, like terrorizing his kid for the rest of the kid's life.
This one almost goes as dark as the ending of the original Black Christmas. You know, we don't want to get too much of that, but it's almost like that where it's like, God damn, you know? Shit, you know, then you just kind of the end credits. Fuck. So, yeah, I mean, I think it's definitely worth, if nothing else, it's worth a watch. I don't know if it's something like you'd put on rotation, something you go, you know, and want to watch annually or anything like that, but I think it is worth a watch at least once, especially if you're of a similar age to us. You know, if you're a kid that grew up in that 80s time frame, you know, probably at this point, we're getting old. You're in your early, at least your early 40s by this point. If you're of a certain age, I think you'll have a better appreciation for it, you know, than some others. So I think it's definitely worth checking out. But before we completely check out on this one, we got to run through some of the usuals here. Donnie is not here for his connections from the crypt, didn't send them to us, so we're going to skip that altogether. But as we mentioned on the last episode, and you've probably kind of put together, Will is not going to be joining us as much anymore. So we have decided to hand the old kill count duties over to Tiana. So, all right, Tiana, what numbers did you come up with us?
2.
Sounds
not very much happens.
Sounds about right.
You see the boy and his skin off in the tub.
Yeah, whatever the hell happened to him, Jesus. What do you think happened there? Did he put him in a tub of acid? What the hell was going on there?
That chemical.
Yeah, remember that chemical thing that they were talking about earlier when the kid is like, I was trying to think of this killer. He wrote it down, and he wrote it down wrong. And the other kid's like, do you mean NaOH, which is sodium hydroxide? Yeah, that's for, you know, some people use it to clean the skin off animals and all this stuff. So I guess that's what that was. Supposed to be a tub of that.
Yeah, you're right. And that was, so we're going to count that one. And then the other one was Woody getting his throat slice, right?
Slice, but I just remembered when Davey was running through the woods to get away from the guy, he fell and there was a bunch of bodies with that bag of chemical stuff right near them.
I couldn't tell how many bodies.
And then supposedly that whole wall of photos he had in his house, he had killed every single one of those people.
Yeah, and then there was some kind of one of the newspaper headlines or whatever when he was on the loose, so to speak, that like the body count was 15 or something. So
if
you want to count those, you could probably go as high as, 12 to 15 bodies that you don't know about, you don't see happen, off-screen kind of stuff. But the only ones you do see is the body in the tub and then Woody, right?
Yeah.
So I think two is fair. We'll stick with that. But that does naturally lead us to,
let's talk about the kill reel.
I like kill.
I personally love it. when they turn out like this. The highlight kills one because you only see one happen on the screen.
Yeah, you don't have any, you don't have anything to compare with. So yeah, it's like, okay, I guess it's
gonna be so. So mystery solved, Scoob. It's Woody getting his throat slit, slashed. That's the highlight kill.
It probably would be that anyway, even if they did show some of the other ones, right?
Yeah, because it is pretty rough. It is pretty rough. But yeah. that lastly leads us to
Gore Score.
Yeah, it's we've talked about it. It's not a high body count, obviously. There's only one person killed on screen and one that was killed off screen, and do you see the aftermath? And those are the only two gore scenes, really. The bathtub scene that Tiana mentioned is, you know, you see the aftermath of this body in the tub with partially skin, mostly off of his face or whatever, and just gooey, you know, the skin and fat, I guess, in the tub, just, you know, so like, ugh, yeah, that's pretty nasty, right? And then you get the throat slit, which is very messed up just because it's, you know, we mentioned the actor in that role, and this is probably why the actor had to be 25, maybe.
Yeah, you're probably,
you know,
right. Yeah.
Going to be doing some stuff that, yeah, that was that involved that, you know, is getting his throat slit and all that. So, but, you know, he's playing a kid that's supposed to be, what, 15 or 16.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, those are the two scenes that involve gore. So I think because, especially the throat slit scene was pretty brutal, the body in the tub with the, you know, his fat all melted around him, whatever. And that, so for those two, I think I'll go with a 5, only because if they weren't that brutal, it would have been even less, because this movie's not about high body count and gore.
No.
More about the detective work, everything going on, and then the twist, brutal ending kind of thing. So, yeah, for those two scenes, I'll give it a 5 just because of how brutal the throat slashing is and how kind of nasty the tub scene just is, even though it's an aftermath type thing. You don't see him, you know, his body getting eaten up with the sodium hydroxide or anything.
So this is definitely one. Don't go into it expecting wall-to-wall gore or anything, but there are a few scenes there that'll, you know, for the more sensitive of us, you should be aware of a little bit later on, because, you know, a couple of gruesome ones, but not a lot. And so I think it's fair. As far as where we sit, our final total consensus is 2.6 stars out of 5. So I think that's kind of, to me, anything over 2.5 really is worth checking out at least once. You know, if we're cumulatively saying at least 2.5, it's probably worth your time to at least see it once. You may or may not like it, but, you know, 50-50, right? It's almost literally the definition of 50-50 is 2.6 stars. So we'll leave it there. Next week, we return to our Cult Corner series, and we all nominated something, and we spun the wheel, and it landed on Donnie's selection, A Scanner Darkly. I believe that was from 2006. Either of you seen that one?
No.
Not yet. Nope. I've known about it since it came out. I remember seeing it on video store shelves. I know that's how old it was. Yeah. And it was still, remember seeing it in the video store, Hollywood Video or whatever. Always thought about renting it, but just never got around to it. So it took that long. However long that was. What year was it you said it came out?
2006
till now.
So it just took you 18 years to finally get around to it.
Yeah.
It's got a hell of a cast, though. I mean, just right off the top, Keanu Reeves, Winona Ryder, Robert Downey Jr., bunch of other ones. So it's got a hell of a cast, although it's kind of a weirdly, like, cel-shaded animated kind of thing. We'll talk more about that next week. So it's going to be interesting, if nothing else, an interesting selection for Cold Corner. So we'll leave it there for now. So for Will and Donnie, who couldn't be here, Tiana, the Professor Smoke, I'm Josh. We are the All-American Spook Show, and come back next week for A Scanner Darkly.
Please replace the speaker on its rack when you're ready to leave. Failure to do so will damage both the speaker and your car. We'll be grateful, and so will the patrons who follow you.